Well, so some years ago, I don't remember exactly how many, but my oldest son decided he wanted to read the Bible through, beginning to end, for the first time. And it was in relation to that that his first question was, "Dad, what is leaven?" I don't know. I tend to get those kinds of Bible trivia kinds of questions in my house. But is it, well, leaven, son, is yeast. You know what the next question was? Well, what is yeast? Well, you know, yeast is like, well, that's what Grandma uses to make the rolls for Thanksgiving. And you know how the rolls puff up nice and soft? You know, she leaves them out and then they rise and make nice big fat rolls. Well, it's yeast that does that. You know what I just realized? I'm supposed to tell you there's a handout available. If you you don't need it, but if you want it, I don't know. A seminary prof comes, he has to have a handout for you to take notes. But you don't have to if you don't want to. But if you need one and want one, we have them. I was in the middle of telling you about my son's grandmother. It's on my mother's side that makes these rolls, okay? To which he said, "Grandma uses yeast? Grandma uses leaven? Because I was just reading the Bible and leaven's like really, really bad." You know, Exodus 12 says, you know, anyone who's found using yeast is to be removed from God's people, you know? Grandma uses Jesus. Like I was telling him, yeah, sometimes grandma uses a Ouija board to contact Satan, you know? So what is that about? Well, let's start here. What's so bad about leaven? What's so bad about yeast? Well, it's actually not always bad, even in the Old Testament. Leviticus 23, actually, when it's describing the Feast of Weeks, or the 50 days after first fruits, otherwise known as Pentecost, that the Israelites are allowed, in fact, I guess required, because leavened bread is mentioned there. They're celebrating the wheat harvest, and so they're to use leavened bread in that feast. So it's not like it's inherently evil all the time. But it all started in Exodus 12, when God is about to rescue his people. He says, you've been slaves for a long time in this foreign land that is not yours, and I'm about to rescue you. The last of the plagues is about to come. The death angel is about to be sent. You're to slaughter a lamb, put the blood on the doorposts, and then the angel of death will pass over you. But you're to eat the roasted lamb with unleavened bread. Why unleavened? Because when the rescue comes, it's going to happen fast. There's no time to wait for bread to rise. And in fact, the Israelites making the bread without yeast, that is, recognizing that there's no time for the bread to rise, was a demonstration of their faith and their faithfulness of what the Lord was saying was true. And they were to eat that Passover meal, get this, with their cloak tucked in their belt, their sandals on their feet, and their staff in their hand, packed and ready to go at any time. Sometime you ought to have a preacher come in and preach on that that passage, and really passionately. It'd be really good. But cloak tucked in your belt, sandals on your feet, staff in your hand. And then after Exodus 12, leaven became something of a symbol, an emblem of things that corrupt, that undermine faithfulness, undermine faith and devotion to God. Such by the time we get to the New Testament, particularly the Jewish scholar Paul uses leaven consistently as something that's bad, that's sinful. You can actually use it both ways, and Jesus does. Jesus says the kingdom is kind of like leaven, you know, or like salt, you know, same kind of analogy. But, you know, your job, our job, is to permeate the world that we're in and salt it or leaven it. That is, make it better. But often in the New Testament, including in Jesus, leaven is something insidious, starts out small, seemingly inconsequential at first, that corrodes, corrupts. This morning, I want to do a thorough exposition of this major theme. We've got till noon or one, right? Yeah. No, actually, I'm just going to talk about one verse. Exactly one verse. Mark 8:15, where Jesus says to his disciples this: be careful. Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. Now, unfortunately, in Mark 8, the rest of this section, the rest of this pericope, see, there you go. And thank you for the punctuation. You know, you've now got your seminary 50-cent word, pericope. You know, you can look that up later. But the rest of the section in Mark 8 is devoted to the disciples completely misunderstanding what he says. So we're not going to look at that this morning. We're going to allow Jesus to make his point and focus on his point. Unfortunately, we're not given much more than this. He just mentions these two things like they should know what he's talking about. So we have to investigate and examine and ponder what is this leaven of Pharisees? What is this leaven of Herod? Well, let's start with the second one first. Leaven of Herod. What is the leaven of Herod? Well, the Herod at the time in the region of Galilee was Herod Antipas. He was the son of Herod the Great. So you remember the Herod that killed all the babies 2 years old and under in Bethlehem? That was his dad. So, you know, like Steve was talking about earlier, a wonderful family heritage. You know, great example set by mom and dad, you know. No, that was his dad. When Herod the Great died, he made Herod Antipas tetrarch. Now, we no longer know what tetrarch means. It actually looks like it was a coined term even then. Matthew and Luke refer to Antipas as a tetrarch. A tetrarch means a quarter king. Herod had three other sons. So when he died, he split his territory four ways, Herod Antipas being one of them. So he was a tetrarch, not a full king. Mark is generous, generous to Antipas, generous. He sometimes refers to Herod as king, you know, Antipas as king. And he was over the Galilee region, but he wasn't full king. Not that he thought about it or that bothered him at all, just every day of his life. that bothered him from day one, as we're told by historians of the period. You know what he wanted to be? He wanted to be like his dad. Herod the Great was known as King of the Jews because Herod the Great was the last Herod to rule over the whole Judean, Samarian, Galilean territory. His son, Antipas, aspired to be great like his dad and be King of the Jews. You know, it just hit me. That phrase sounds familiar. King of the Jews. Why does that sound so familiar? Seemed like somebody had that placard over their head when they died. That's the title Antipas aspired to, King of the Jews. Now you remember what happened to the person who had that placard put over their head when they died. You know what they had to do to get that placard put on? That was on a cross, put in mockery. Or maybe as a dig to the Jews that brought Jesus before Pilate. It was sarcastic. And he spoke better than he knew. But that's the title that Antipas wanted. But of course, he wanted nothing to do with the humility or sacrifice, much less the suffering that it would take to actually earn that title before Tiberius the emperor, much less before God Almighty. He wanted the title. He wanted the perks. But he didn't want the humility, sacrifice, or suffering that Jesus says, you want to be the greatest? Then be the least. You want to be the highest? Become the servant of all. And then Jesus showed exactly what that entailed. Is that the leaven of Herod? Be careful. Beware the leaven of Herod. If it is, that's what Jesus is talking about. Can I ask you this morning? To what degree are you distracted by the aspirations to self-promotion, self-advancement, power and position? How much of your life is devoted to trying to secure your place in the world? Here's a diagnostic question. How much of your life, of your thought, of your energy is invested in your having either a private or public competition with someone else in your life? You know, Herod Antipas spent his whole life in competition with his three brothers, trying to advance themselves, trying to maneuver, trying to position himself. How much of your life is devoted? How much of your thought is distracted by aspiration to self-advancement, self-promotion? Because I got to tell you, that's antithetical to discipleship. Here's another diagnostic. If your mental response to that question is, well, hey, we're all trying to get ahead. Hey, we're all just trying to put bread on the table. Man, if your response is defensive like that, because I'm going to tell you, yeah, of course, you got to make a living. I get that. But if your response, if your visceral, instinctive response is a defensive, well, hey, I'm just doing, it's a dog-eat-dog world, you know. Don't hate me for playing the game, blame the game. I'm talking to you. If that's your visceral response, that's how you know you've got an issue. I'm talking to you. And Jesus' words echo today. Be careful. Beware the leaven of Herod. Because it'll erode your entire walk with God. It'll disrupt your whole life. Or it could be this that Jesus is talking about. Two chapters ago, we're told that Herod Antipas was the one who had John the Baptist. Remember the forerunner of Jesus? Herod Antipas is the one who had John the Baptist first arrested and then beheaded. Beheaded by a stupid deal where he was seduced by this dance by his daughter-in-law. It's a sordid story. But in the euphoria and probably sexual arousal of that dance, he lost his head and said, "I'll give you whatever you want." And she went to her mom, and her mom said, "John the Baptist's head. Ask for John the Baptist's head." And that's how it happened. We're told that two chapters ago. So at this point, Jesus says to the disciples, be careful. Beware the leaven of Herod. Well, what might he be talking about? He might be talking about what we're told in verse 20 of Mark 6. That Herod was actually afraid of John. Because he knew that John the Baptist was a righteous and holy man. So he kept him safe. Well, at first. He kept him as safe as he could. I mean, his wife wanted him immediately executed. Wanted John the Baptist immediately executed. But he didn't concede. But he was afraid. He knew that John the Baptist was righteous and holy. So he kept him safe until he caved. And get this. When he heard him, he was very perplexed. But he actually used to enjoy listening to him. And Jesus says, be careful. Beware of the leaven of Herod. You know what? In this church, the reason I know this is not because I know this church, but because I know in every church, there is at least a percentage of people that are involved, not committed. You know what that means? You remember the pig and the chicken got together and said, the pig comes and says, I've got a great idea. Or the chicken comes and says, I've got a great idea. Let's provide a breakfast for the farmer. And the chicken says, I'll provide the eggs, you provide the ham. And the pig realizes, wait a minute. Mr. Chicken, you're involved. What you're asking from me is commitment. You know, hear the difference between involved and commitment? Well, this church, after years of prayer and search, has had your prayers answered by a new pastor. New, young, visionary pastor, right? The Lord has been doing a work in this church. And I suspect that there are people that come occasionally. You may come every week. And you might be perplexed by what you hear. Kind of enjoy Pastor Brian's preaching. I'm interested. You know, I'm willing to give this church a chance to show me what they can do for me. No need to thank me. I'm willing to give you a shot, you know. Pastor Brian, you know, I'm willing to put a dollar in the offering plate. You know, you're going to need to earn it now, boy. But, I'm willing to give you a chance to see what you can do to help me make my life better. Well, that's about the level of commitment of Herod Antipas. He enjoyed listening to John the Baptist. That John the Baptist, I got to tell you, he's a good preacher. I mean, seriously, I could listen to him for hours. Sometimes I take his CD home and listen to it in the car. I mean, it's really interesting. And Jesus says, be careful. Beware. Being curious. Being interested in what the message may be is not actually the call of the gospel. It's not actually the call of discipleship. Beware the leaven of Herod. Beware the mentality that says, I'm a faithful disciple of Jesus. I give my 1.5 hours. In fact, the preacher goes too long, 1 hour and 45 minutes. Every week. I mean, I'm a faithful disciple. Rest of the week, I look pretty much like everybody else at work. I look pretty much like the rest of my neighborhood. And Jesus says, beware. That's the kind of leaven that can keep you lukewarm your whole life. You know what that is? That's a double-minded person. Rather than single-minded, singularly devoted, you know, rather than having one Lord, one God, one worship object, it's a double-minded person. You know what Jesus' brother James says? A double-minded person is unstable in all their ways. You may think you're getting away with it. I know. Jesus says you cannot serve both God and materialism. But I got to tell you, I'm an American Christian. We Americans know you work the crease right, you kind of can. And Jesus says, beware, beware. You may think you're getting away with something, but you're allowing a corrosive influence that makes your entire life unstable. What about the leaven of the Pharisees? You know that Mark 8:15 is the only passage where Jesus puts the two together? And so it's tempting to say, okay, leaven of Herod, that's the worldly leaven. And leaven of the Pharisees, that's the Christian religious leaven. Now there could be something to that. Because the Pharisees, we know whenever we see Pharisee, try and look for a Christian clip art. I mean, you know how hard I had to look for this? You know, it doesn't have the Pharisees with a gnarled expression on their lie, you know. They look like a cartoon warlock or something, you know, a Disney villain. But the Pharisees in their day were considered the good guys, the religious heroes. They were studied in the Word, engaged in Scripture memory programs. That's the truth. Their problem was not that they did not know the Bible. They did. But their lives were riddled with leaven. What does that mean? Well, we get some help from Luke 12 on this one. We get another cross-reference where Jesus says, when I say leaven of the Pharisees, this is what I mean. Luke 12, Jesus tells us, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. You know what hypocrisy is? Let me ask you this. What's the opposite of hypocrisy? And we will play some Jeopardy music while you are contemplating. No, it's good. It's good. What's the opposite of hypocrisy? Integrity. There's another word for that too. Integrity is correct. Humility. I didn't put this up here, but I mean, you genuineness, integrity. Genuineness, integrity is the opposite of hypocrisy. We're not going to camp here long, but Jesus actually calls us to even a higher standard than that. Might frame it this way. Integrity, genuineness, is being the same person in private as you are in public. The same person when people are looking, or same person when people are not looking as when people are looking. Hypocrisy is you're a different person in public than in private. You know what Jesus actually calls us to? He doesn't say, you know, stop praying. What Jesus says is, better for your best prayers to be not when everyone is listening. Better to be a prayer that nobody knows you're a prayer. You know, be a generous giver. That's another, no problem with that. But better to be a giver that no one knows how generous you are. In other words, Jesus in Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5-7, Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount lays out his ethic as, not only are you the same person in private as you are in public, you may look good in public, but you actually look better in private than you do in public. Now, knowing how severe are the censures of hypocrisy, I don't want to be a hypocrite, so I need to tell you, that is still an aspirational ethic for me. So I know that it's true, and I see the call of discipleship, but I've got to tell you, that's an ethic that I'm still aspiring to. I can't put it in the past perfect. I still have to put it in the present progressive. I'm still being discipled in that realm. But Jesus says, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. Well, how is hypocrisy like leaven? How is this factor of looking better when people are looking than you do when no one's looking? Because part of the point Jesus makes in Luke 12 is there's never a time when no one's looking. But how does that creep in? Well, it starts kind of small and innocuous looking. You just knowingly give the impression or allow the impression that you're just a bit more holy, a bit more devoted, a bit more Bible teaching committed than you actually are. And it starts small, starts innocuous looking. That's not important how I know this, okay? But it starts small, you know? With just an innocuous kind of posturing. And before you know it, you find, I kind of like being known as the holy, devoted disciple. I kind of like being the go-to person for, when we need really godly disciple advice, that I'm the go-to person. And before you know it, that small, innocuous kind of impression and creation and posturing ends up taking over. And before you know it, your whole life is disoriented. That is a singular orientation. You look that way because you really are. But if you're privately harboring these other elements, well, after a while, lo and behold, you find, I don't know how it happened, but I'm living a double life. I teach seminary for a living. And I got to tell you, I'm spanking proud of our graduates at Biblical Seminary. That's the truth. That's genuine. That's authentic. I've been teaching now at Biblical. It's close to 20 years. And unfortunately, as well as the graduates that are doing great kingdom missional ministry, that are thriving and doing great sacrificial and courageous work for the Lord, I've known more than one that, you look back and you say, maybe I could see some of this coming, but here they were harboring this pornography habit. Some of them, gifted preachers, gifted leaders, but have this area that has just allowed to flourish like cancer, or like termites. I mean, think of the leaven that way, like termites. This great palatial estate, but it's got termites. Well, half a dozen termites, they're not going to be so bad. But give that 10 years, and it's 6 million termites. This great palatial estate's going to come crashing down. Or this great leader, gifted, but just has this element of pride. You know, arrogance. You know, some people go into the ministry, or particularly pastoral ministry, teaching, preaching ministry. No one you know, of course, but you know, this doesn't apply to theology professors. You know, I'm talking about other. But you know, some people go into it in part because they like telling people what to do. You know, they like being the spiritual boss. Or, what Hebrews calls a root of bitterness. You know, this conflict that should have been handled in a Matthew 18 kind of a way, that the conflict is addressed, you know, not just swept under the rug, but genuinely addressed with all facts confirmed, you know. Maybe you need some other people involved to help you sort it through. Where was there sinfulness committed that needed to be repented of, and where, you know, this is a misunderstanding. You really aren't entitled to be that angry. The person didn't intend what you thought they said. But that grows then into a whole life of bitterness and anger or competition, or, you know, I could be at a bigger church, or I could be in a more successful ministry if only it weren't for that person, or whatever. Start small and then just grows, 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 grows. Some area of weakness. Some area of compromise. Then instead of being identified and eradicated, is allowed to flourish instead. You know what scares me a little bit about especially Luke 12's Beware the Leaven of Hypocrisy? You know, in Luke 12, there's a whole crowd of people. In fact, Luke 12 tells us the crowd is so big they were stepping on one another. But this message was to his disciples, first of all. Do you know who it seems Jesus believes is particularly vulnerable to the leaven of hypocrisy? Would-be disciples. Would-be Christian leaders. Would-be influencers of God's people. Jesus, be careful, beware. The leaven of hypocrisy. Now, I didn't put this up here. I don't know how long it's been up here. But the core values of Hope Community Church include a place where people are strengthened, genuineness is encouraged. Now, I don't know if you put that up in preparation of this message, but can I tell you the only place where that's going to happen? The only way that that's going to happen is if this is also true. Is if Hope Community Church is also a place, a caring place, where God transforms lives. Now I can tell you at Biblical Seminary, we have assignments, we have diagnostic tests. Some of it's required by our accreditors. You know, the Catholic Church had this whole scandal of priests sexually assaulting children. You know about that? I don't know. You may not have seen the news in the last 50 years. But, you know, you may be living in a cave. But the government has taken that really seriously. It says seminaries, Protestant or Catholic, evangelical or mainline or whatever, you need to ensure that the people that you're putting out as ministers have some kind of vetting, that they're not predators of some kind. So we've got all kinds, we've got a battery of tests, a regimen of diagnostics, including having the pastor write in and confirm the character of the person, appear and whatnot. But you know what? We say this to students coming in every year. I'm teaching a course of seniors right now, and I tell them going out, you know what? For all that, you can still fool us. And predators are really good at fooling people. You know, I want to tell you this morning, here at Hope Community Church, you can fool us. You can fool your pastor. You can fool your elders. You can even fool your accountability partners if you don't take the warning of Jesus seriously, that says you might be able to get away with it or think you're getting away with it, but it's like cancer. You think you're going to get away with ignoring cancer? I got a little lump under my arm. But it's no big deal, though. I've learned to wear other clothes so people can't see it. How smart is that? Not. This is as serious as that. Be careful, Jesus warns. Beware the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. I want to ask you this morning, as I ask myself, preaching to Todd Mangum, first of all, what kind of leaven you got in your cupboard that needs to be cleaned out? Let's bow our heads for a moment. I'm going to give you exactly 1 minute right there before the Lord. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand or come forward or anything. But I'm going to ask you this, there at your seat. Do you have an area that, as we've been working through this passage this morning, where you can say, you know, honestly, as I look at, think about my own life, I've got this area that I know Jesus would call that leaven. Let me give you 1 minute to, one, take that before the Lord, just you and Him, there at your seat, and say, Lord, You, by Your Spirit, You've identified this in my life that I know is leaven and I know it's serious. It may look innocuous, harmless now, but I know that it's serious, dangerous, insidious. Lord, I bring it before You. I want to commit to do what I have to do to eradicate, eliminate, excise, surgically remove that area of leaven in my life. Let me give you just a minute. Father God, thank You for the message of Your Son Jesus that challenges our heart, that calls us to sacrificial, fully committed discipleship even today. In His name, amen. Now before I dismiss to the musicians or turn it over to the musicians, let me ask, I know we have our pastor here. If you are an elder in the church, could you stand for just a moment? For those of you who just prayed to the Lord about having an area of leaven in your life that you want to address. And part of what you need is not just individual effort, but you need some accountability in your life somehow. Can I ask you to, if they're standing here, contact, go to privately, maybe email, maybe phone call, or maybe after the service, just seek one of them out and say, part of what I want to pursue is some kind of accountability to address the area of my life. And up to you whether you tell them right then and there what that area is. But I want to know how I can get connected to some kind of accountability. All right? Fair enough? Musicians.
Stand with us again this morning.